Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sunsounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode, on Thursday, November 21st, 2024, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Biden locks in $6.6 billion for TSMC chip factories, ensuring Trump can't rescind CHIPS Act deal. Carrie Lake settles defamation suit with Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richer. Democratic State Senate candidate John McClain was killed by a drunk driver Friday morning. Voters sent a host of extremists and conspiracy theorists to the AZ Capitol. How Maricopa County prepared for the Election Day spotlight. And let's get started. Our first story, Biden locks in $6.6 billion for TSMC chip factories, ensuring Trump can't rescind CHIPS Act deal, by Phineas Hogan of Cronkite News, November 18, 2024. The Biden administration has finalized a $6.6 billion award for the Taiwan semiconductor giant that is building massive factories in Phoenix, amid concerns President-elect Donald Trump will derail subsidies aimed at fostering the domestic chip industry. This is a gigantic announcement, Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo told reporters on a call ahead of the announcement early Friday, 10 days after Trump's election. This will be one of the most important investments that we make as a country to advance our economic and national security, she said. The Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company plans to invest $65 billion on three state-of-the-art fabrication plants, or fabs, that mean thousands of jobs in Arizona. Semiconductors are used in chips that make computers work, along with cell phones, fighter jets, self-driving cars, artificial intelligence, and even ovens. U.S. officials alluded to Trump's election to explain the timing of the award. For the next 2 months, you'll continue to see Commerce finalizing more awards, ensuring progress made to date will carry forward through the end of the decade, Lael Brainerd, director of the National Economic Council, told reporters Thursday, 2 months and a week before Trump will be sworn in. In April, the Biden administration promised $6.6 billion in grants to TSMC to build the Phoenix fabs, plus up to $5 billion in loans. The funds come from one of Biden's signature legislative achievements, the CHIPS and Science Act, which set aside $52.7 billion for chip research, manufacturing, and workforce development in the United States. TSMC, one of the world's largest companies, makes chips for leading technology and artificial intelligence developers, including Apple, NVIDIA, and AMDI. In June, Trump rattled investors when he accused Taiwan of stealing the U.S. chip industry and asserted the U.S. shouldn't be, quote, giving them billions of dollars to build chips. That chips deal is so bad, he said October 25th on the Joe Rogan podcast. Last month, House Speaker Mike Johnson, who voted against the CHIPS Act, said he would work to repeal the law if Trump was elected. He quickly backtracked when fellow Republicans reminded him of the jobs on the line in their districts. TSMC announced the first Arizona fab in May 2020. Production began in April. Biden signed the CHIPS Act in August 2022. The company announced a second fab in December that year, with production expected to start by 2028. The company announced its third fab in April when Biden announced a preliminary agreement to provide the federal subsidies. To receive funding under the CHIPS Act, the company must hit certain construction, production, and other milestones. TSMC has met enough milestones to receive at least $1 billion by the end of the year, and will receive the rest as the project progresses, said Michael Schmidt, director of the CHIPS Program Office at the Commerce Department. "It's a binding contract," added Ryan Harper, the White House CHIPS Implementation Coordinator. "The company, as long as it meets its milestones, has a contractual binding agreement from the government to move forward." Early production yields at TSMC's first fab in Arizona are at least as good as at similar factories in Taiwan, Bloomberg reported last month. Raimondo called the progress, quote, "unbelievable." "Even though it has never been done before in the U.S., it's being done now," she said. "To all the naysayers, I say, it's happening. The proof is in the pudding." TSMC's plants in Arizona represent the biggest such foreign investment in U.S. history, the White House said. In a statement, Biden noted that semiconductors were invented in the United States, but only 10% are now made here, and all of the most advanced chips are made overseas. "Once the first TSMC fab is fully operational in a few months," Biden said, "for the first time in decades, an American manufacturing plant will be producing the leading-edge chips used in our most advanced technologies." And that concludes this story. Biden locks in $6.6 billion for TSMC chip factories, ensuring Trump can't rescind CHIPS Act deal. Our next story, Carrie Lake settles defamation suit with Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richer, by Caitlin Sievers, November 17, 2024. After a bitter court battle, Carrie Lake has entered a settlement agreement with Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richer in a defamation lawsuit over Lake's false accusations that he helped to steal the 2022 race for Arizona governor from her. Lake, a Republican endorsed by President-elect Donald Trump in 2022 and in this year's run for the U.S. Senate, is one of Arizona's most prominent purveyors of the, quote, big lie that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from Trump. She brought similar allegations about her own loss to Democrat Katie Hobbs in the race for governor 2 years ago, specifically highlighting Richard's supposed involvement. The terms of the settlement are confidential. The Washington Post first reported that a settlement had been reached, and the Arizona Mirror independently verified the settlement. "The matter has been settled and was resolved to the satisfaction of both parties," a spokesperson for Richer's legal team told the Mirror in a written statement. Richer sought damages to reimburse him and his wife for the thousands of dollars he said they spent to install new security features in their home after he said Lake's false statements spurred threats of violence and harassment. Additionally, Richer asked for an award of punitive damages, compensation for damages to his reputation and mental health, and for Lake to admit that her claims about him were false. Richer was elected county recorder in 2020 and lost his bid for re-election in the July Republican primary to Arizona State Representative Justin Heap. Heap never directly admitted that he believed that the 2020 and 2022 elections in Arizona were stolen from candidates, but he voted for bills based on election conspiracy theories, including ones promoted by Lake. News of the settlement came just days after Lake danced around a formal concession to Democratic U.S. Congressman Ruben Gallego in the race for U.S. Senate, after he won by more than 79,000 votes. She still hasn't conceded the governor's race that happened more than 2 years ago. Richer filed the defamation suit in June 2023 after Lake spent months falsely accusing Richer of rigging the race for governor against her. Lake repeatedly claimed, without evidence, that Richer was responsible for 300,000 quote, illegal, invalid, phony, or bogus early ballots being counted in Maricopa County. She spent 2 years challenging the results of the 2022 election, in which she was defeated by more than 17,000 votes, but lost every trial and appeal in the case. In December 2023, attorneys for Lake asked a Maricopa County Superior Court judge to dismiss the case, arguing that Lake's claims were, quote, rhetorical hyperbole and not meant to be taken as facts. But the judge was not convinced and allowed the case to proceed. In March, Lake defaulted in the case, legally conceding that her claims about Richard were false, even as she continued to say the opposite in public statements on conservative podcasts and radio shows. After that, Richard and Lake entered into a months-long struggle to compel the other to turn over evidence that could be used to present to a jury to determine how much Richard was owed in damages. Although Lake initially claimed that she was excited to fight Richard in the case and for the discovery process, she repeatedly refused to hand over documents in the case and said that all emails pertinent to the case in her Carrie Lake for Arizona campaign account had been, quote, purged when the campaign was dissolved. While one of her lawyers falsely claimed that Carrie Lake for Arizona ceased to exist almost a year before the defamation suit was filed, leaving her free from an obligation to retain evidence. The campaign filed its last finance report in early 2024 and was spending money through December 31, 2023, more than 6 months after Richard filed the suit. When the settlement was reached, Lake was quickly approaching a November 22nd deadline to provide a sworn statement to the court describing when her campaign emails were purged and at whose direction. An attorney for Lake's husband, Jeffrey Halpern, who was a defendant in the lawsuit alongside Lake and her campaign, attempted last week to get the case dismissed, accusing Richard of ignoring a court order to turn over evidence that quantified how much he believed he was owed in damages. The attorney also accused Richard of destroying evidence, saying he permanently deleted his ex, formerly Twitter, account after the November 5th election, cutting the defense's access to relevant social media posts. But Richard had only deactivated his account, reactivating it less than a week later. A spokesperson for Lake's Senate campaign did not respond to a request for comment. And that concludes this story. Carrie Lake settles defamation suit with Maricopa County Recorder Stephen Richer. Next, we'll be reading a story from the Tucson Sentinel. Democratic State Senate candidate John McClain was killed by a drunk driver Friday morning. The 27-year-old driver is facing aggravated DUI and manslaughter charges by Dylan Smith and Jim Nitzel, November 15, 2024. John McClain, a Democratic candidate for the state Senate who lost last week's election, was killed in a traffic collision near Broadway and Houghton Road on Friday morning, police said. McClain, 68, was driving east on Broadway when a northbound vehicle ran a stop sign and hit the politician's car, a Tucson Police Department spokesman said. McClain, an executive for a defense contractor before his run for office, was declared dead at the scene. The other driver, who was not seriously injured, was determined to be impaired and faces charges of manslaughter and aggravated DUI, police said. McClain is the 82nd person to die on Tucson streets so far this year. The toll includes 27 people in vehicles, 29 pedestrians, 7 bicyclists, and 19 riding motorcycles. By this point in 2023, 89 people had died in roadway incidents in the city. According to TPD, police believe McClain was driving a 2019 Toyota RAV4 eastbound on Broadway. Michael Martin Creel, 27, was at the wheel of a 2018 Ford Explorer heading north on Ridgeside Drive, east of Houghton Road, and failed to stop at the intersection. Ridgeside's roadway before the intersection is straight, with a, quote, stop ahead sign placed well before Ridgeside meets Broadway. The Explorer hit the RAV4 on the passenger side, according to interviews and roadway evidence collected at the scene by detectives, police said. An officer with the Impaired Driver Enforcement Unit assessed Creel for impairment, TPD said. It was determined that Mr. Creel was impaired at the time of the collision and was subsequently placed under arrest, police said. Creel was booked into the Pima County Jail and faces criminal charges. Under state law, manslaughter is a Class 2 felony with a potential sentence of 7 to 21 years in prison for a first offense. Aggravated DUI is a Class 6 felony in Arizona, with charges elevated due to repeat offenses or driving impaired with a suspended license. Sentences include a mandatory minimum of 4 months in prison and 10 years of probation, with potential prison time up to 3.75 years and steep fines. Creel has a previous DUI conviction from April 2022. He also faced a DUI charge that August, but it was dismissed. He was convicted of disorderly conduct and underage drinking in 2015 and assault that year, and has faced numerous other charges that have been dismissed in Tucson City Court. The investigation remains ongoing, and detectives have currently listed speed and impairment as the known contributing factors of the crash, TPT said. McLean narrowly trailed in the heavily Republican 17th Legislative District as former State Senator Vince Leach, who was ousted in the 2022 primary by Senator Justine Wodzak, only to come back and beat her in this year's primary, won with a 2% margin. My thoughts and prayers are with the McLean family for their tragic loss today, Leach said. My deepest condolences go out to John's family and friends in a difficult time. As a third-generation Arizonan, the lives John touched during his life are incalculable, and we should all be so fortunate to do the same. Born in Phoenix, McLean graduated from the University of Arizona in 1975 and then received a PhD from the University of California. A decade later, he returned to Tucson. He was CEO of Arete Associates, a Defense Department contractor that bills itself as providing leading-edge science and engineering, protecting the nation and world from seafloor to space, and previously worked for TRW Space and Defense Group. He was active in the dog rescue community. State Senator Priya Sundaresan, a Democrat who met McLean when he decided to run for the legislature, said she was devastated by the news. I'm grieving the fact that we've lost a wonderful candidate and wonderful man, someone who was so cheerful in putting in the hard work to run a very significant campaign, Sundaresan said. He retired and he remained engaged in the community with all those organizations, supporting animals, and then wanted to make that bigger difference. The Arizona Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee released a statement regarding McLean's death. Throughout his campaign, John exemplified all the qualities of a great leader. He focused on listening and learning, with his kindness and generosity always shining through. Running for public office was just the most recent way John McLean stepped up for his community. Whether as a business leader, volunteer, or humanitarian for the causes he was passionate about, John always did the hard work of bringing people together to serve the common good, the political group said. McLean told the Sentinel this summer that when he was working as a CEO, he traveled too much to have a dog. So literally, the day after I retired, we came home with a 10-week-old chocolate lab puppy, McLean said. A few months after we got this beautiful young dog, I started volunteering down at the Humane Society and working with the dogs down there. And that is the end of this story. Democratic State Senate candidate John McLean was killed by a drunk driver Friday morning. Next up, voters sent a host of extremists and conspiracy theorists to the AZ Capitol by Jared McDonald Evoy, November 18, 2024. Arizona has been a hotbed for conspiratorial and extremist ideology, and a number of incoming lawmakers, some returning to the Capitol, and others who will be new legislators, will likely continue that trend. A number of lawmakers who will be at the state capitol in the coming months have amplified everything from QAnon to white nationalists to anti-LGBTQ rhetoric. Some have even touted their support for and participation in anti-government extremist groups. These lawmakers, some of whom are in leadership positions for the GOP majority, will be key in driving the agenda in the legislature for the next 2 years. The Senate. Incumbent Republican Senator David Farnsworth, a dyed-in-the-wool QAnon believer, handily won re-election. Farnsworth has been known for being a champion of conspiracy theories and became something of a hero to the political fringe. In 2019, Farnsworth gave an exclusive interview to the Falun Gong-backed newspaper, The Epoch Times, about his belief that the state's child safety agency was behind sex trafficking, making the claim without any evidence. The reporter who conducted the interview has a record of anti-Semitism, racism, and has promoted QAnon. In 2020, Farnsworth told the Mirror that QAnon was a, quote, credible group. He said he had no idea that QAnon had been deemed a domestic terror threat by the FBI more than a year earlier, and he didn't care. Quite frankly, I don't have time to look into things like that, he said. Farnsworth will be the chairman of the Senate Education Committee. He isn't the only QAnon-believing senator to win re-election this cycle. Janae Shamp, who was present during some of the most violent moments of the January 6, 2021 attempted coup, promoted QAnon multiple times on social media. Shamp, an ardent supporter of President Trump, has previously denied knowledge of QAnon when asked about her beliefs. Shamp was the co-chair of a controversial special legislative committee which shared the same acronym as a popular QAnon acronym. The novel Coronavirus Southwestern Intergovernmental Committee, or NCSWIC, shared the acronym with the QAnon slogan, "Nothing can stop what is coming," a phrase parroted by QAnon adherents, suggesting that mass arrests or even executions of members of the, quote, deep state would be coming. Shamp called any link between QAnon and the committee a goofy accusation, despite speakers having connections to QAnon and her own Facebook history of posting QAnon content, including the phrase. Shamp will be the co-chair of the Senate Committee on the Military and the Border. She will also be the Senate Majority Leader, the number two Republican in the chamber. Flagstaff Republican Senator Wendy Rogers, who has been not only boosting QAnon conspiracy theories, but has eagerly been interviewed by multiple anti-Semites, also won her re-election bid. The senator has a strong presence on social media, where she has amassed more than 380,000 followers on X and more than 65,000 subscribers on Telegram. She often posts links from far-right websites and personalities, and her posts are often shared by far-right influencers and personalities. Since she was elected in 2020, Rogers has become a darling in the Arizona GOP, leveraging support of election conspiracy theories into a national following that she has used to become a fundraising juggernaut. Over the years, she has become more ingrained with the far-right and gone from amplifying their messages to participating in their events. In 2021, Rogers appeared multiple times on an online broadcast network that had made multiple anti-Semitic remarks. The network, True News, TRUNEWS, has a history of spreading anti-Semitic rhetoric, including a piece in which Rick Wiles, its founder, spent 90 minutes ranting about seditious Jews that were orchestrating Trump's impeachment. Wiles has also called the Jewish people tyrants and claimed that the Antichrist will be a homosexual Jew. Both times she appeared on True News, Rogers was interviewed by Lauren Witzke, a conspiracy theorist with a history of anti-Semitism. Witski is connected to the other known white nationalists and anti-Semites, participated in a white nationalist youth event in Arizona in 2022, and echoed white nationalist beliefs during an appearance on the white nationalist podcast, No White Guilt, on which she promoted the Great Replacement Theory. Rogers has also promoted the Great Replacement Theory, touted support from the anti-government extremist Oath Keepers, and delivered a video message at the America First Political Action Conference, a conference hosted by known white nationalist and anti-Semite Nick Fuentes. Rogers will be the chairwoman for the Senate Committee on Judiciary and Elections. Senator-elect Karine Werner, a Republican who was previously on the Scottsdale Unified Governing Board, has appeared at the Capitol alongside Rogers and others, promoting education curriculum created by the right-wing PragerU. The material includes videos where historical figures like Christopher Columbus claim slavery was better than being killed, and Frederick Douglass claims that the Founding Fathers, who owned slaves, had ending slavery on their to-do list. Werner will chair the Senate Education Committee and will be the chairwoman of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. Mark Fincham, who previously served in the Arizona House of Representatives before an unsuccessful run for Arizona Secretary of State, also will be joining the Arizona Senate in January. He has long been no stranger to conspiracy theories and lately has latched onto a QAnon conspiracy theory in Tennessee, where he has admitted to accessing confidential financial information that is tightly controlled by federal law. Fincham has often courted those from the fringe and especially those in the QAnon world. He has spoken at their conventions and held fundraisers with known QAnon believers and 9/11 truthers. He has also raised money from the Oath Keepers and was present at the Capitol during the events of January 6, 2021. The Prescott senator-elect also was instrumental in pushing false narratives around the 2020 election that ultimately led to protesters storming the Capitol on January 6. Fincham will be the chair of the Senate Federalism Committee. The House. The Arizona House of Representatives will see some new and returning conspiratorial-minded lawmakers, some in high positions of leadership. They include Steve Montenegro, who was elected by his caucus this week to be the new Speaker of the House. While many may know the lawmaker from the scandal several years ago after reports that he traded sexually explicit texts with a staffer, Montenegro has also been a key behind-the-scenes player in the election denial world. Montenegro works for the America Project as its national policy director. The nonprofit group was started by former Overstock.com CEO Patrick Byrne and contributed more than half of the funding for the Senate's partisan, quote, audit of the 2020 election, putting in more than $3.2 million. Byrne has been a leading voice in 2020 election fraud claims and has railed against the so-called deep state. He was also an attendee of an hour-long meeting at the White House during the final days of Trump's presidency, in which he, Sidney Powell, and disgraced retired General Michael Flynn urged the president to overturn the election. It was later discovered as well that Montenegro was one of the people who had control over the controversial Audit War Room Twitter account to give an in-state perspective to the tweets. Montenegro has also appeared alongside Byrne, Flynn, and other election conspiracy theorists through his work for the America Project. And he has helped to bring those conspiracy theorists to the state capitol, being part of the misinformation-filled committees about COVID-19 that was supported and promoted by Byrne's group, as well as President-elect Donald Trump's border czar, Tom Homan. Montenegro isn't the only connection to the Arizona Senate's audit of the 2020 election. Former Cyber Ninjas attorney Alexander Kolodin was re-elected to the House. The attorney has worked for a number of election deniers and Republican elected officials, including on challenges to the election. Kolodin represented QAnon conspiracy theorist Melody Jennings, who was fighting against a temporary restraining order being sought against her group for monitoring drop boxes and harassing voters who use them. Further reporting by the Arizona Mirror found that the group to have connections to the Oath Keepers and other militias. Kolodin was also hired by the Arizona Republican Party in a failed legal challenge to early voting in Arizona that made many claims, including that ballot drop boxes in Arizona were unconstitutional. Southern Arizona conservative Rachel Jones also won her re-election bid. Jones is married to prominent election denier Seth Keschel, who has spread a number of falsehoods around the election for a number of years. Jones has been a proponent of a slew of debunked election conspiracies and even this year theorized that her GOP seatmate, Cory Maguire, lost his re-election bid because of fraud, despite having no evidence for making such a claim. Election denial isn't the only conspiratorial thinking that will be making its way to the Arizona House next session either. Representative-elect Lisa Fink, a Glendale Republican who has worked closely with the Gilbert-based hate group Family Watch International to try to stop comprehensive sex education in schools. Family Watch International has promoted conversion therapy and claims that transgender people are, quote, mentally ill. Fink worked as a representative for an offshoot organization of Family Watch International called the Protect Arizona Children Coalition, which is against teaching sex education in the state. Fink will be joined by other, quote, culture warriors, such as Pamela Carter, sister of original Wonder Woman Linda Carter, who has opposed same-sex marriage and pushed for firearms in schools. And that's all for this story. Voters send a host of extremists and conspiracy theorists to the AZ Capitol. And you're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Next up, Copper World mine opponents sue AZ Land Department, alleging open meeting violation. By Jim Small, November 14, 2024. An environmental advocacy group and the state's largest pecan farming company filed an appeal Tuesday challenging a state land board's approval of a controversial right-of-way needed for a proposed $1.3 billion copper mining project southeast of Tucson. Save the Scenic Santa Ritas and Farmers Investment Company argue the Arizona State Land Department violated state law and the Arizona Constitution by granting Copper World, Inc. permission to build infrastructure across protected research land. The appeal follows a September court victory in which Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Scott Blaney ruled the state land board violated Arizona's open meeting law by failing to disclose the right-of-way would be used for pipelines to transport millions of tons of mine waste, known as tailings. The Santa Rita Experimental Range is required by state law to be operated for ecological and rangeland research, Rob Peters, executive director of Save the Scenic Santa Ritas, said in a written statement announcing the new litigation. The Arizona State Land Department violated state law, the state constitution, and department regulations when it granted right-of-way to Copper World for industrial uses. The right-of-way would allow Copper World, a subsidiary of Canadian mining company Hudbay Minerals, Inc., to construct power lines, communications lines, and pipelines for water and mine waste across the Santa Rita Experimental Range, a 52,000-acre research facility established in 1902. The most recent Copper World proposal would span 44 years in two phases, beginning on the west side of the mountain range near the town of Green Valley. The first phase would include a 17-year mine life on property that Hudbay already owns. That initial phase would allow the multinational corporation ample time to obtain permits required to mine on the public lands to the east of the initial site. Once fully completed, operations would obliterate a 1.5-mile stretch of ridgeline and leave millions of tons of mine waste behind. Pima County has publicly opposed the project since at least 2011. At issue is whether the Land Department circumvented legal protections for the range. In 1988, the Arizona legislature mandated it be used only for research, and a 1991 Land Department order closed it to development, including rights of way. The legislature did not authorize the Land Development to Create bureaucratic scheme to grant a foreign mining company industrial rights of way across the ecologically sensitive range. Nan Walden, chief counsel for Farmers Investment Company, which operates pecan farms near the proposed mine site, said in a statement. The appeal challenges an October 8 Land Board decision that attempted to rectify open meetings violations from December 2022. The earlier approval was invalidated after Blaney found the board failed to inform the public that the right-of-way would include 6 pipelines for mine tailings rather than the 2 water pipelines originally disclosed. According to Save the Scenic Santa Rita's and Farmers Investment Company, the reapproval of the right-of-way for the project once again failed to provide a detailed description of the project and the mine tailings pipelines. Copper World plans multiple open pit mines on both sides of the Santa Rita Mountains, about 35 miles southeast of Tucson. The project includes the controversial Rosemont Pit and would place, quote, hundreds of millions of tons of mine waste on private land next to the research range, according to court documents. We will continue to pursue all legal options to stop this horrific mining project that will destroy the northern half of the Santa Rita Mountains, deplete billions of gallons of groundwater from the Santa Cruz River Valley, pollute the air, dump hundreds of millions of tons of toxic mine tailings near existing neighborhoods and schools, all to mine copper that will be exported overseas, Peters said. The Santa Rita Experimental Range, originally operated by the U.S. Forest Service until its transfer to Arizona in 1988, is the longest continuously active rangeland research facility and among the 5 oldest biological field stations in the United States, according to range officials. The Arizona State Land Department said it would not comment on pending litigation, and a spokesperson for HUDBay said the mining company was reviewing the filing. And that concludes this story. Copper World mine opponents sue AZ Land Department, alleging open meeting violation. Next up, we have a story by Jared McDonald Evoy. A handful of 2024 races are headed to a recount, including one legislative seat. November 19, 2024. Election season is over, which means it's now recount season, thanks to a 2022 law that greatly expanded the threshold for recounting close races. In Maricopa County, 3 races currently qualify for a recount: Fountain Hills Town Council, Maricopa County Board of Supervisors District 3, and State Representative for Legislative District 2. In Pima County, the race for sheriff will likely see a recount, and a city council race in Page in Coconino County likely will as well. Those races all fall within the threshold created by a law signed by former Governor Doug Ducey that triggers an automatic recount if the race has a margin of 0.5%. Each race will need to have the election officer for each race file a court order saying the race qualifies for the recount. Prior to the change in law, automatic recounts were generally triggered when the margin between candidates was less than 0.1% of total votes cast for the 2 candidates. Before a recount takes place, state law says that a city or town council must certify that one is necessary, and then file with a Superior Court judge, who would then order the recount. The new law triggered multiple recounts in 2022, but none changed the original outcomes of the races. In the race for the second House of Representatives seat in Legislative District 2, the margin is only 0.08%, or 132 votes, which will trigger an automatic recount. And even though only 17,106 ballots were cast for the Fountain Hills Council race, Maricopa County will also need to recount all 2 million ballots cast in the election because ballots are not sorted by precinct or city. Here are the races slated for recount after the election is officially certified. Maricopa County Board of Supervisors District 3. Kate Brophy McGee, Republican, and Daniel Valenzuela, Democrat, are separated by 0.04%. State Representative for Legislative District 2, Justin Wilmoth, a Republican, and Ari Daniel Bradshaw, also a Republican, are separated by 0.08%. Fountain Hills Town Council, Matt Corrigan and Clayton Corey, are separated by 0.03%. Pima County Sheriff, Chris Nanos, Democrat, and Heather Lappin, a Republican, are separated by 0.2%. Page City Council, Tom Sunshine Preller and John Cochen are separated by 0.12%. During the recount, all electronic voting equipment will undergo logic and accuracy testing, and paper ballots will be retabulated. Additionally, state law requires a separate mandatory hand count audit of precincts, and 5% of vote centers will undergo a hand count by election workers and representatives from both parties. And that concludes this election update. A handful of 2024 races are headed to a recount, including one legislative seat. Our next story, how Maricopa County prepared for the Election Day spotlight. The county's communications team applied the lessons it learned from past elections and its battles against misinformation. By Jen Fifield of VoteBeat, November 18, 2024. It's Sunday morning before the big event, and Jennifer Luer is standing outside the Election Center in downtown Phoenix, inspecting a metal tent frame that contractors are erecting in the parking lot. "I told him to make it bigger," she tells a colleague. "I'm not sure if this is the, quote, bigger." Luer, Maricopa County's Deputy Elections Director for Communications, knows hundreds of journalists from around the world will be here on Election Day, working in this tent. To be able to do her job, then, she needs to be a logistics manager now, directing trucks and workers while ensuring that voters can still drive up to the ballot drop box in the parking lot. The last two federal elections, county officials were caught by surprise when worldwide media attention turned toward Maricopa. After 2020, journalists arrived to watch allies of Donald Trump recount all 2.1 million ballots cast in the county after Trump claimed, without evidence, that the election was rigged against him. Then, on the day of the midterm election, widespread technical failures at the polls spurred similar claims of fraud, this time from failed GOP gubernatorial candidate Kerry Lake. This year, Trump and Lake were both back on the ballot. Arizona, and especially Maricopa, the country's largest swing county, was predicted to help decide the presidential election. Nearly 700 journalists applied for credentials. Luer and her colleagues knew this was an opportunity to help restore public trust in elections in the most scrutinized county in one of the most closely watched states. The county brought on more staff to handle media requests, sent a packet to reporters in advance detailing how the county runs its elections, prepared a live fact-check page on its website, required journalists working from the Election Center tent to obtain credentials, and spent $35,000 to set up the media tent and bathrooms in the parking lot. Luer allowed VoteBeat to shadow her in the days leading up to her Election Day gauntlet. On Sunday, her phone buzzed repeatedly as she met with colleague Ali Flahive in a room serving as a communications command center. Soon, anyone responsible for election messaging would be sitting at the rows of tables fitted with computer monitors. Two projector screens at the front of the room would soon show wait times at the polls and a running list of pending media inquiries. On the wall were framed black and white signs with quotes from Scott Jarrett, one of the county's two elections directors. "This is the Super Bowl of elections," one said. "We are the bell of the ball," another declared. County officials didn't ask for this attention, but they're getting used to it. Cutting through the noise, Maricopa County officials fight back. In 2020 and 2022, Luer watched from behind the scenes as a spokesperson for the county attorney's office. When she stepped into her role last year, she knew what she was getting into. It's not her first high-pressure role, and she's often found herself responding to crises. Just out of college, she began working for the American Red Cross in Phoenix and was called to New York after the 9/11 attacks. She was spokesperson for the city of Glendale when it hosted the 2008 Super Bowl and responded to high media interest about financial problems, and later for the Arizona Supreme Court as the elected county attorney faced disciplinary proceedings. She started in the county attorney's office under Alistair Adell in 2019 and represented the office as Adell publicly battled alcoholism. And she was there in 2022 when the office commissioned an outside investigation of the Election Day problems. The next year, when the communications role opened, she knew she could handle it. "Here we are doing it together, and the chaos is on the outside," she said, sitting in her office on the Sunday before the election. It's not lost on her that she is now coordinating media arrangements and messaging for what Jared calls the Super Bowl of elections, when she once did the same for the actual Super Bowl. Of course, the stakes for the presidential election are a little different. She's watched county election officials manage all the twists and turns of the past 4 years, and she uses that information to anticipate what's coming her way. "For a while, the county took a backseat approach to communications," said Supervisor Bill Gates. "That was true even as state Senate Republicans subpoenaed every ballot cast in the county's 2020 election for what they called an audit. But the strategy shifted quickly. In May 2021, the Senate's contractors, Cyba Ninjas, falsely accused the county's workers of deleting election files. County Recorder Stephen Richer, a Republican, had been reserved until then, but when Trump echoed that false claim on social media, Richer responded on Twitter, calling it, quote, unhinged. That's around when typically mild-mannered supervisors, Chairman Jack Sellers, a Republican, began to call the audit a, quote, grift. From then on, the county's tone changed. We thought, that's enough, we can't remain silent, Gates recalled, and that's been the motivation ever since. It's about defending the team, defending our workers. County Communications Director Fields Mosley began to transform the county's sleepy social media account with live fact-checking, plus some snark aimed at the auditors. Hashtag real auditors don't assume guilt and post false information like it's a season one cliffhanger, the account tweeted on May 14, 2021. It was their way to cut through the noise, said Zach Sharia, Gates' chief of staff at the time, and now an assistant county manager overseeing elections. There was no other answer. The 2022 midterms, a setback on Election Day. As the 2022 midterm election approached, the county adopted a strategy from its COVID-19 response and set up a command center for the first time. "Immediacy is top concern," a draft county communications plan from the Times said. "Rumors, misinformation should be addressed ASAP." Leading up to the election, county officials were holding weekly press conferences. Then, when polls opened on Election Day, they found themselves contending with a significant problem. Tabulators across the county weren't accepting ballots, and county officials had to tell reporters they didn't know why. That night, reporters filled the lobby of the election center to question officials. The officials explained that the problem was with the ballot printers, not the tabulators, but didn't provide details that night or for months. The lack of immediate answer allowed conspiracy theories to flourish. Voter confidence took another hit. Afterwards, to shore it up, the county started to more aggressively push public tours of the election center. Officials hosted about 100 tours this year so far, in between running elections. The county also spent $1.8 million on paid TV, radio, digital, and social media ads and billboards this year, trying to get information about voter registration, mail ballots, and other issues straight to the voters before the election. Deciding what to say and what not to say. Behind Luer's desk is a sign, "Do what is right, not what is easy." When pressure hits, she said it's important for her to be honest about what's happening while still respecting her team's opinions on what information they aren't prepared to share. If she can't talk about something, she said, she is upfront about that. "I think it's about being true to the people you work for directly, but also being true to the community," she said. Of course, not everyone agrees on what is right or that the county has gotten its communications effort right in the past. At times, the county has withheld information. Officials chose not to respond to the Cyber Ninja's questions about the 2020 election and, after 2022, chose to wait 5 months until an independent investigation was complete to provide detailed answers about what went wrong with the ballot printers. In both instances, misinformation spread without a quick official response. Critics have also taken aim at the county's past requests to social media platforms to remove posts officials believe are false or harassing. And after the county started restricting events only to credentialed media, a court ruled that it had to provide access to outlets it had banned, such as the Gateway Pundit, a right-wing website that frequently publishes misinformation. Luer has to now take all of that into account. "We will not be playing whack-a-mole," officials lay out plan. On the Monday morning before the election, Luer swivels in her chair at her desk as she talks to local radio reporters from KTAR. She's been getting media requests all morning, and she seems antsy to get off the phone. She still has to finish preparing for a press conference in a few hours, the final of three leading up to the election. Dozens of journalists are expected. She tells the reporter she has to go. "I hope I was nice," she said as she hangs up. She reads through a script she's printed out, highlighting certain comments, crossing out others. Some reporters have gotten word that the county is experiencing delays while processing early ballots, and they're asking her about it. A local reporter for Axios Phoenix texts her to ask exactly what results would come out at 8 p.m. election night. Would they all be early ballots received up to Friday or Saturday? "It's actually neither," Luer says, dictating a text message into her phone. The recorder is going to address it in the press conference this afternoon. Flahive stops by to let her know the staff started a new spreadsheet, this one to keep track of news broadcasters' live shot requests for Election Day. They are trying to get through the backlog in the media inbox, but requests are coming in faster than they can respond. Overall, from September through mid-November, a team of seven would field more than 1,000 media inquiries. In the afternoon, more than 100 journalists sit at tables or stand behind cameras on tripods in a county conference room. The Gateway Pundit employee banned in 2022 is in the first row. Gates, Richer, Shreya, and Luer walk to the front of the room. Mosley, the county communications director, is already there in the back. Shira speaks last, telling the crowd that if misinformation shows up on Election Day, we will not be playing whack-a-mole. But what we will be taking very seriously is any misinformation that impacts a voter's ability to vote a ballot, Shreya said. That misinformation, we will be very aggressive in reporting. Luer sets the stage for what visiting reporters can expect. "Obviously, there are a lot of members of the press here," she tells the crowd. Her staff can't take questions from everyone, she said, but they will be there all week to help. And with that, she opens it up to the floor. And that concludes this story, How Maricopa County Prepared for the Election Day Spotlight. And as we're getting ready to wrap up, we have Election Day bomb threats sent to Maricopa, Pima counties were identical, by Jared McDonald, Evoy, November 20th, 2024. Bomb threats sent to Maricopa and Pima counties on Election Day contained identical language according to copies of the threats obtained through public records requests. Arizona was one of several states where polling places or election facilities were subject to bomb threats on Election Day. 10 of the state's 15 counties received bomb threats that day, according to Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays. Officials deemed the threats non-credible, and during Election Day they stressed that no voters were in immediate danger or were kept from voting because of the threats. However, some locations had to evacuate, including in Maricopa County, when a threat was aimed at the Superior Court building, where recorder Stephen Richard's office is located. On the night of the election, Richard was seen evacuating his office in response to one of the threats. Election offices in Cochise, La Paz, and Maricopa counties also evacuated. However, many others did not. Cochise, Coconino, Gila, La Paz, Maricopa, Navajo, Pima, Pinal, Yavapai, and Yuma counties all received Election Day bomb threats. A threat emailed to Maricopa County and obtained by the Mirror via a public records request shares identical language to the one obtained by VoteBeat in Pima County, also through a public records request. The email with the subject line My Manifesto comes from an email account with the name MAGA_Alex, which is similar to the one received by Pima County with the same subject and a sender named MAGA_Sam. Both emails have the same wording except for a change in the address where they claimed a bomb had been planted. It will not cause much damage to the building, but there will be many wounded people when it explodes, MAGA Alex said in the email to Maricopa. I plan on remotely detonating the device as soon as there is a large police presence. And there's actually an image here of this particular email threat that was sent. And it looks like that's all the time we're going to have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. If you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click On Demand Podcasts. You can also take Sun Sounds with you by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones, and you can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Thanks so much for joining us this week, and stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona.